Thank you.
Your Honors, we allege a number of errors as part of our appeal here, but I'll spend the majority of my allotted time discussing the jury instructions that were requested by the defense, but were not given by the court. The hearsay statements of Ms. Cozy, through that were allowed into Officer Scarlett's testimony on the mission of the knife, into evidence facing large bodies, hearsay statements.
Counsel, I realize you have co-counsel here.
Yes.
Are you presenting the entire argument?
I'm going to present the entire argument, Your Honor, and please report. I'm Sean Liskey, and I am representing the defendant, Christian Mott.
Thank you.
So the issue, and we'll start with the jury instructions issue. I think that's a very interesting issue in the state of Nebraska. We had requested the defense of others' instruction in this matter that dealt with essentially a person who was shielding my client, the defendant, from reentering the bar where his father was being assaulted in an effort to assist his father.
Does it make any difference for the first time that actually took place? He's outside of the bar, and if he doesn't have any visual contact, he's seeing exactly what happened to him.
No, because in the state of Nebraska, the instruction is given, and even the form instruction for defense of others, which is derivative of the self-defense, it's a reasonableness standard as far as does the defendant have a reasonable belief that some harm is going to come to his father who's in the bar. As he was being pushed out of the bar, as testified to by my client, he did see his father on his knees, blood covering his face, and believe that he had been assaulted and was continuing to be assaulted. When my client gets pushed out,
he didn't say that he saw it.
No,
he just saw that his, what appeared to be something that happened to his body, and there was blood coming down. And so I understand him wanting to go to assist his father, but I'm not finding where he had any knowledge that his father was being assaulted by someone.
And again, that's where I go back to the reasonableness standard of self-defense and defense of others, is that this was in the middle of a bar fight. My client had also been assaulted initially as a part of this. His father had come to assist, and he had heard the noise of the, my client heard the noise of what was occurring with his father, which is in a very close proximity, which is difficult, I think, to maintain a sense of scale and the facts of this matter. We're talking a few feet, and people in a bar. He then gets pushed out of the bar, my client does, and as he's being pushed, he sees his father on the floor, bloody. My client knows he has been assaulted, at least his father has been assaulted. From that standpoint, then, I think that we have met the burden to at least have the court give the instruction and let the finder of fact and my jury determine whether or not my client would have been reasonable in his belief that his father was being assaulted and then could have either found him not guilty by use of it and such others.
But there's not a single fact, is there, after he saw his father on the ground on his hands and knees bleeding. There's not a single fact in the record that would indicate that he saw some other gesture, some other activity by someone else that would suggest his father was under continued threat.
I think, again, that's where you have to go with the reasonable standard. If he's being pushed out of the bar, forcefully, and it's not an escort, and then that was carried out by the testimony of the people who were actually pushing him out of the bar, he was being, had force used upon him to be pushed out of the bar. I think it's reasonable for him to see his father, an elderly gentleman, covered in blood as there's a bar fight going on. My client is a part of that. It's reasonable for him to believe that they're pushing me out of the bar, they're going to continue to assault.
It's reasonable to believe he wants to go help his father, but even in your own proposed instruction, it says they reasonably believe that the force used against the guy he stabbed was immediately necessary to protect his father against any such force used or threat by himself, right? And like I said, at that point in time, there was just there's no evidence in the record that there was any further threat. In fact, the evidence would seem to suggest that there was an attempt to de-escalate whatever was going on by taking people outside. So by your own proposed instruction, I'm just not sure what facts in the record would suggest that.
The thing is, I think that the and I agree with you as far as what my client testified to. And that's, again, where I think this instruction is to go to the jury. so that the jury can determine whether or not they believe his plea was reasonable and that he was being pushed out. I think that's a really fact-determinative question that that the judge gives instruction saying that my client testified that he reasonably believed that there was going to be ongoing threats to his father. There's other evidence in the record from other sources that suggest that was, in fact, the case, or could have been the case, and then to allow the jury to determine whether or not my client believed in what he saw was reasonable or not.
Isn't, though, under the facts as the client testified to, the problem the immediate, that word, immediate need to protect his father?
Correct. And I think, again, this is a, and I mentioned that there's some scale here as far as I think the other sense would be the sense of time. This happened in a matter of seconds. This wasn't a matter of minutes where we de-escalated and we had escort people from the bar. This happened like that. My client was on the ground, assaulted, gets up. Father comes around, he gets knocked down, gets assaulted, and my client gets pushed out the door. Now, certainly there's questions as far as exactly what my client saw, but this happened within a matter of seconds, not a matter of minutes. And so the immediacy, I think, is there just from the time. The other issue that I wanted to address, the court wants to hear that issue, and I think is important, would be hearsay statements that were admitted through one of the witnesses, Posey, who was never available for cross-examination by the defense, either in the form of a deposition or certainly not available at trial for cross-examination. This is the testimony that was allowed in through Officer Scarlett, where by Mr. Posey testifies, or excuse me, Mr. Posey allegedly makes a statement to Officer Scarlett at the scene. He finds a knife, or has a knife in his hand, walks up to the police officers with his hands in the air, pulling the knife, point down, and says, "This is the knife the guy used to stab the people and make some gesture towards the people."
I don't mean to interrupt you, but I know your time is going to run out pretty quick. If we would buy into it, that would be wrong. And it's there. Is it prejudicial to your client?
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Because that was initially determined at a motion to eliminate that testimony and testimony. We felt that it's certainly violative of Wild Crawford and from testimonial hearsay. And also, we didn't feel that the excited utterance standard that was coming in on.
So your client admitted it was his knife.
Correct, because he was placed in a position where he had to put himself on the witness stand and testify after the judge had determined.
But isn't that the problem? And you have to make the decision whether you want to rely upon the fact that this testimony should not have been admitted and bring it up to us on that ground.
Correct.
But once he testifies, now he's admitted that the knife's his. He's used it to stab him. So now whether or not it was air for the court to do that, it's not prejudicial because he's already told the evidence that he did.
And I understand that the court's concern with that. My concern with what I felt would be a violation of the Sixth Amendment, then my client felt that the only remedy he had was to go to the Fifth Amendment rights and testify. And I think the two wrongs make a right in this matter. And I think that the court can still review the decision on the motion and when the motion determine whether or not the court made the correct decision for admitting that over our Sixth Amendment objections and also over the hearsay objection and the injection. So that's why I feel that the Sixth Amendment issue is highly important here, and my client may have made a different decision after that.
I seem to recall the state maybe said in its brief that you didn't raise this particular objection in the motion in the issue of the hearsay of Cochran.
Yes, we did. Yeah, we did. The state had filed a motion to admit the hearsay statements to get a termination prior to trial. We went in and objected to the request to also that the knife not be admitted, but then in the motion when we argued the Crawford and then also the testimony of the hearsay, and then also argued against the admission of the check. Your Honor, I'd like to save just a couple of seconds for Laura. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court, counsel, I'm Siobhan Duffy, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the Apple of the State of Nebraska. As a preliminary matter, briefly, my review of the record was that it wasn't raised in the actual motion that was made. If I was incorrect on that, the state does not contend that it was waived. It was objected to on a hearsay statement at the proper stages. As another preliminary matter, when reviewing my brief in preparation for this argument, I noticed a factual error I made that I wanted to correct for the court on page 7 in my statement of facts. Obviously, we had a defendant and a father, both with the last name, and I, about halfway down the page, referred to a defendant as having hit Van Steenberg with a pool stick. It was actually his father's can. That was the actual testimony. And again, that's page 7, about halfway down the page. So, not a great way to start off getting to point out my mistake, but we appreciate that. Appellant has assigned 5 errors on appeal. I believe the state addressed them in all 5 errors in our brief, and pending questions from this court on specific assignments of error, I intend to focus on the jury instructions. Appellant argues that the district court erred in failing to give his proposed instructions 1 through 4. The state does note that proposed instruction number 3, the self-defense instruction as it relates to victim Gregory, does appear to be the instruction that was given besides differences in how the names were phrased. That proposed language did not use any concert language. The proposed self-defense instruction related to victim Wilson, which was defendant's proposed instruction number 1. The jury was given self-defense instructions for both victims. Appellant's proposed instructions would have instructed the jury to consider whether the force used was necessary to protect appellant from force used or threatened by Wilson or in concert with other assailants. The state does not believe that that is a correct statement of the law. Self-defense is against a specific person and not a generalized group of actors. Any harm that was being threatened against the appellant would have come from Wilson, who was pushing past the bar in an attempt to de-escalate the fight. And the jury was instructed to consider whether the force used by appellant against Wilson was immediately necessary to protect himself, and they rejected that.
But that's not really what the defendant has ever contended. The defendant has always contended that he needed to get away from these people that were pushing him out of the bar to go help his father.
Correct, and I'll move into the proposed defense of other instruction. So the proposed jury instructions on defense of others, the state does not believe those were warranted by the evidence and that the district court did not commit error in refusing to give them. The force used by appellant was not immediately necessary to protect his father. Appellant did testify. Well, Your Honor, I think all that appellant saw, he testified to, he saw his father on the ground with a bloody face. And yes, I understand that it would be natural if we want to assist his father, see what had happened. But at the time, he had already been engaged in a fight or a tussle with Andre Reyners, and they were. I apologize. There's that issue again. The appellant. The testimony was that Reyners and appellant, even from both, were engaged in some sort of tussle. That they started to wrestle around, and that Gregory and Wilson went over to separate them out. And Eugene Posey actually, I believe, is the person we can assume identified Reyners out, or took Reyners out one door, and Wilson took appellant out another door. And appellant testified that he did see his father on the ground with blood on his face, but he testified he did not see anyone strike him. He didn't see anything else but his father on the ground. And I understand that is concerning to him, but it does not mean that the force he used when he was outside the bar, taking out a knife and stabbing 2 people, was immediately necessary to protect his father.
Is it what actually is the case, or is it what he reasonably believes?
Well, I think even looking at what he reasonably believes, all he sees is his father on the ground. And I don't know that it's reasonable to believe that I was in a fight and people are escorting me out, and I see my dad on the ground, and that means that someone is harming him or that they're going to harm him. I mean, you said he was already on the ground. If there had been a fight, it had already happened.
I don't mean to be disrespectful to the parties, but from what I'm reading about this case, it appears that, for lack of a better term, they're kind of a rough move.
I think it was a bar fight.
And so you have to kind of put it in context, that maybe it's not the person who maybe is going to be thinking like you and I might be thinking, because their background and the things that have happened to them in their life, and now they're in this, quote, bar.
I can understand that point, Your Honor, but I still think that the force needs to be a reasonable and immediately necessary, and I just don't think that based on the facts available to the appellant at the time, that his father's on the ground and bloodied, and that people are, Wilson testified, he's pushing him out of the bar, saying it's not worth it, they're separating them, to think that it is immediately necessary for him to pull out a knife and stab Wilson and then stab Gregory when he's outside the bar and he's unaware of any threat that's occurring.
Didn't the appellant defendant, didn't he testify that he felt like his hands were being stabbed? Or?
Your Honor, he did say he felt a sharp pain from wrist to elbow in one hand and then felt it in the other. But a nurse who treated him, or didn't treat him, he refused treatment, but a nurse who saw him at the hospital said he had some abrasions, which she described as superficial wounds on his hands, and so I don't know that the evidence supports that he would act, you know, maybe when he's getting pushed out, it is a small space, I'm sure that there's some, you're going to get knocked around.
There's nothing to support that he's been stabbed.
Well, Your Honor, he had all of the evidence was that he had some abrasions, which were described as superficial wounds, and he refused treatment, so I don't know that the evidence was that there were stab wounds, and certainly it was nothing that was treated, that he requested treatment for that night. So, as I mentioned, the state does not believe that the defense of others' instruction was required by the evidence, or would have been supported by the evidence, and so that the district court did not commit error.
So if he had seen somebody raising a stick, still in the bar, here he's dead, then it would, then the defense of others would have been.
I think changing some of the little facts like that may change. Because, you know, I sat trying to think of any kind of scenario where you would want, you know, a defense of other when it's. But I just think based on what was available to the appellant at the time, all he saw was his father on the ground and his face, you know, was covered in blood. Maybe he fell, maybe he had a bloody nose. I mean, I guess that goes to your point, Judge Imbati, that this is maybe a rough crowd in a bar, but appellant had been fighting, people were separating him, telling him it's not worth it, and the other person was also being taken out of the bar, which I think is important. It wasn't just this is against appellant. Both parties are being removed from the bar to try and de-escalate the situation.
Does the evidence reflect whether or not the individuals who were escorting the defendant out of the bar had also been involved in the pool game where the, I think the father took the pool stick off of the
Dan Steinberg was, so I believe the appellant's testimony and some of the other witnesses that Wilson was the one kind of pushing the appellant out. He was directly in front of the appellant. And that at some point behind him was Gregory, the other victim, and Van Steenberg. He's AJ in the, all the testimony. And the testimony from Gregory and Van Steenberg, Gregory testified he saw Raynard and the appellant kind of engage in a conversation that looked like it was going to go south. And so he headed over. And as he, I don't recall if they started tussling, as he's halfway there, he was much closer when they started. He testified he saw Appellant's father pick up a pool cue, and Rainer's back was to father, and he cocked it back. Gregory said, I thought he was going to hit him on the head, so I grabbed it, I threw it. Gregory then focused his attention on Rainer's impellent. At that point, Van Steenberg testified he saw Gregory grab the cue, throw it off to the side, and then saw Appellant's father pick up another pool cue. And that's when he went over and punched Appellant's father in the face. At some point, then Van Steenberg is outside of the bar with Appellant. Well, I don't think that any of that would have been known to Appellant at that time. All Appellant knew was that he saw his father on the floor, and that's it. And based on the testimony, when he was not engaged in a fight and when he would have been being pushed out the door, it would have been after all that happened. Anthony Purvis, another witness, testified that he saw the fight between Appellant's father and another individual. He didn't know who it was. And he picked Appellant's father off the floor and held him back in a bear hug to keep everyone separated and again de-escalate the situation. I think it was a bar fight, but I just don't think based on the facts that it was reasonable to believe it was immediately necessary to take out a knife and stab two people when he's outside the bar, he's unaware of any immediate threat. to his father, and the state does not believe the instructions were warranted by the evidence. I am out of time if there are any, if there are no other additional questions.
We have none.
All right, we ask that you affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
How much time does Mr. Lipsy have remaining?
25 seconds.
25 seconds.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor. I just wanted to mention that it is a correct statement of the law as far as the instruction we request from State v. Boyd, 69-5-16, 1903 case that we had cited in our motion, or in our request for jury instruction, allows you to stand for the premise to attack a non-combatant if the person seeking for self-defense believes that that person is working in concert with people assaulting him. We're simply asking the court to extend that as many jurisdictions have, Wyoming, for example, as we cited in the brief, to the defense of others, because in Nebraska, self-defense and defense of others, the defense of others is derivative of self-defense.
Wilson wasn't part of that,
No, but Wilson, it's the in-concert language is important, and the testimony that came in to trial from these witnesses who were all involved in that said that they knew what they were doing. They've been in bar fights in this bar before. They knew how to take care of the problem, and they worked together for Wilson to push my client out the door, and then the others to take care of my client's father, and DJ joined Wilson, and after that. It's not that Wilson was the direct harm to the father. That's not what we're asking or what we're suggesting. It's that he was keeping my client from helping his father.
So it should be okay for people who are legitimately trying to de-escalate a situation. It's okay for them to get stabbed?
Well, here's how I would couch that. If I'm standing at the door, say, in here, and someone is being assaulted in here, and a person goes and stands in front and will not allow me in why the other people are assaulting me just go in here, what we're saying is that I should be able to be allowed to use force against the shield over here that's preventing me to come in and help the person who's assaulted. That's what my client reasonably believes he was doing.
Regardless of if it's the trooper out there that pulled you back because he doesn't want any more people, whatever, you get to just stab them to come in because you think someone else might get hurt worse than you.
That's what you're talking about, and I think you make a very good point. You're talking about the real fact-driven point of the, and this is a narrow defense, and I think that that's recognized in other jurisdictions. If it's the trooper out there, he's now working under the color of authority of his office as a trooper, and if I was to stab him, now we're talking about a different situation.
Well, why would it be different if it's a bouncer in a bar who's hired there to help with these kind of situations or prevent them? Why would it be different? Why does that person get less protection from someone who's just wants to get back inside into the fight?
Again, the fact scenario that you had laid out, we talked about a bouncer, that's a slightly different fact. That's not someone who's hired by a bar to protect bar patrons versus just a person in the bar who may be working with others to assist in the assault of Kim Bossy by keeping my client, Chris Bossy, out of his bar from helping him or assisting him. It's imputing a certain intent upon Wilson to say that he was just trying to be escalated, because the other conclusion could also be made is that Wilson's pushing my client out the door so that the other guys can finish getting up Kim Bossy.
I get that that's where you're coming from, but unfortunately I just don't see the evidence in this record for him to reasonably believe that there was continuing violence going on. I think that's the issue for you, is that there just really isn't anything in the record to show that there was ongoing violence.
And I agree with the assessment as far as that is completely an issue for us, and I think that should be the issue for the jury, is what our proposition is, that let the jury determine if in the back scenario, because we and I appreciate that, Judge Bishop, we just found a lot of really interesting back scenarios just in a couple minutes that would lend more to our instruction or not, and so I think that's a question for the jury to determine what was presented and makes it reasonable to find out.
Thank you. We did take Mr. Lipsy over substantially. Ms. Duffy, if you'd like 30 seconds to respond, I'll allow it, but it's not necessary.
I'll keep you longer.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Appreciate your arguments, counsel. Your case is submitted.